This is the USEA official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and in this special episode, we celebrate the life of Roger Haller, who passed away on March the 30th. Mike Tucker joins me now from England. He was a lifelong friend and colleague of Roger's and shared so many experiences but knew him intimately, and he joins me now to discuss the life of Roger Haller on this day when he will be celebrated in Georgia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Chris, thank you very much indeed. It's an honour to be asked to talk about a man who has done so much, obviously, for the sport in America, but actually all around the world too.
Well, of course, you celebrated his life, inducting him into the USEA Hall of Fame. But your memories of Roger go back a very long way, Mike, don't they? I mean, you began really about your contemporaries so much the same time.
We did, and many people wouldn't realise. But, you know, there is an expression, Chris, that often says that mates that you make at Pony Club are often mates for life. Well, that's exactly where Roger and I started, because the very first ever Inter-Pacific Pony Club between pony clubs from Australia, New Zealand, Canada, America, and Great Britain, and there might have been actually one or two more, if I'm honest, took part in America in 1965. And that's where Roger and I met. And right from day one, we had, I guess, very much the same sense of humour, the same objectives, and the same wish to try and achieve. And, you know, that's something that stuck with us for a very long time. But that's where it all started, actually.
And it was that grounding in Pony Club. I think he got his A rating at the age of 18. He was with the Somerset Hills Pony Club. And he began riding at Gladstone at the USET headquarters at an early age, by the time he was in his mid-teens. So he had a very strong foundation in horsemanship, didn't he?
Well, he did, and he was, even as a pony clubber, absolutely captivated by Burton Emmethy, who, of course, was at Gladstone at that time. George Morris wasn't very far away, and of course, he got to know, because of all that was going on at Gladstone, and his home was nearby, Jack Legoff too, and all of them legends in their own lifetime, but a man, Roger was a man who was inspired by all of them and learned from all of them too, at a very young age, as you rightly say.
Yeah, and he had a great sense of duty too, because he was already in his early 20s when he began contributing to, you know, the committee work and, you know, giving back to the sport, which was, back in those days, of course, was the U.S. Combined Training Association. And he sat on the board of the U.S. Pony Club and American Horse Shows Association. So he always had that intrinsic sense of paying back to the sport and of contributing to its very structure.
Absolutely. And it was something that stayed with him all his life. I mean, his volunteering was something that was quite incredible. And he was always wanted to give something back. He enjoyed the sport. He loved the sport. It was his life. And he just wanted to give it to others because he thought it was so exciting. And he did it so very successfully, frankly.
Yes, and as you say, it saw him through all his life. He contributed and served on so many different committees.
Oh, huge. Yeah. Huge. When the ghastly disease caught hold of poor Roger, I mean, you know, he was still contributing down in South America with great work down there, a part of the world that's enthusiastic about the sport, but, always needs help. And guess who was there? Roger Haller, doing his very best to make sure that it was going to try and happen to there.
And, of course, very highly principled, Mike, as you know, from the committee work that he did. But he wanted to see the development, the evolution of the sport would come at a very natural pace. And his contribution there was enormous internationally as well, from the FEI all the way down.
Absolutely. Although he got his grounding, as we were saying, from his early days in Far Hills, he had that great base. He immediately wanted to see his own sport stronger in America, which he not alone, but I mean a huge an immense strength for the sport at home in the States. But he got so many friends from around the world, and everywhere he went, he wanted to do the same thing. And there are very few countries in the world that haven't learned from the skills of Roger Haller. It's amazing.
And it's often said that he could recite the rules of the rule book. And as you know, he served with your good friend again, of course, Hugh Thomas, on the FEI Eventing Committee, and completely revised those rules over time.
Yeah. He's always had an extremely good brain for the wording of the rules, and which is vital. One can have an idea of the rules and how one wants to see, but unless they are worded absolutely precisely, so often there are loopholes that just don't really give the answers that the sport requires. And Roger was always good at that, and as you rightly say, played an immense part in his position with the FEI in really modernising the rules from really the old sport in the long format, beginning to turn it round for what happened in the early part of the 21st century.
Well, as we know, Mike, it's very hard to encapsulate all of the things that he did because he was a course designer, a technical delegate, a judge, an organizer, a volunteer. But we shouldn't, before we move on to all those other roles, we should just reflect on his riding career too, because that was significant itself. He really made his mark internationally.
Yes, he did. Funnily enough, that was very clear when we actually had that Inter-Pacific Pony Club competition back in the autumn of 1965. That was held at Potomac, actually, and it was very clear even then that he was a very strong competitor. And although he wouldn't have had, we drew for horses, and he wouldn't necessarily have had the best of the pick, he was still determined. And that was something that stuck with him for a very long time. And I remember him, actually, he came and stayed with us, actually on many occasions, but one particular time when he was looking for an international horse, which he eventually acquired off Birdie Hill, a horse called Golden Griffin, which had got a pretty good record on the circuit here at home. But Roger came over, rode it, liked it, bought it, and, of course, got through to the shortlist for the World Championships, which were at Burley in 1974. Once he got a sort of sniff of the international scene, he was really determined to try and make it all the way. Sadly, it didn't quite happen, but he had a very good career in the saddle, right to the very top. Four stars weren't in existence in those days, but they were still the big ones, and that was Roger's achievement. And one of his sort of biggest frustrations and disappointments was that he came to Badminton in 1975, rode in the dressage on Golden Griffin. It was named by some as Golden Dripping, actually, and we used to tease him about riding Golden Dripping. But did a half-decent test, and then, of course, the rains came down and Badminton was cancelled. And that was always a name. He was a great admirer of Frank Weldon. A lot of Frank's skills were the sort of skills that Roger dreamt of having in terms of management and design and all that sort of thing. And it was always his wish to want to come to Badminton. And he was so near yet so far. And, of course, he sadly never made it again, actually, which was a big disappointment.
Well, that takes us on to the other role he played as a course designer. Of course, that all began at the family farm in New Jersey. The Essex Horse Trials hosted their first event there back in 1968. And he was the first organizer, the course designer and course builder for there, as well as for Ledyard. And then famously, of course, he was given Lexington and also Atlanta, the Olympic Games there. So a very star-studded roster of events there, to his credit. And he enjoyed that aspect of the sport, didn't he?
Very much so, very much so. And, Lexington was... I don't think anyone realised quite how important that one was. And he was particularly thrilled that actually, I mentioned earlier, Frank Weldon, that Frank was his technical delegate, a man who he idolized. And of course, it was an amazing competition. As we all know, it's one of the best sites, if not the best site in the world. And but at that time of year, sort of held in the autumn, heat and humidity can play its part, and of course did. And one remembers the tremendous effort by Bruce Davidson to win the title with Mike Tango when the heat and humidity really got to the horse. And it was a stiff test. And I think, you know, looking back, Roger would say that, you know, we didn't know enough at the time about all of that. But even so, the course provided a competition which was very much a championship test. And set the rules for climate in future years, really.
Yes. Well, he officiated, of course, pretty much all over the States, but in several countries as well, including your local Gymkhana Badminton Horse Trials, which he went back to fondly for many years, didn't he? He was
yep.
He was an important part, and I'm sure a guest at your home too.
Yes, he was, yeah. Nine times he was TD at badminton. And he, you know, his knowledge of the sport was that certainly you really enjoyed. The great thing about a link over the years between a course designer and a technical delegate is to get the best out of both and in the end have a competition that is worthy of the level. And if it's something like badminton, obviously worthy of one of the top titles in the world. And I know Hugh regarded Roger's skills highly. He'd obviously, you know, built and been involved in both sides of the sport, technical delegate and course designing. And that was something that Hugh enjoyed working together. And we actually had many conversations around the kitchen table here in Gloucestershire, talking about the pros and cons of this fence or that fence, the going or whatever. And it was what made him a wonderful technical delegate to work alongside. I had the privilege of starting the Fairhill international competition back in 1989, and Roger was the first ED, and I was the designer for the first few years. And, you know, his stature and his background knowledge is ideal for that sort of scenario when you're going to new sites and you know, you have, you know, areas of the venue that you don't really know quite how it's going to work. And that's where the depth of knowledge that Roger had was always something that was very special, frankly.
Well, anyone that knows him, Mike, will know that he had this great sense of duty. He was a very serious man, but he was also wickedly funny. He had quite the sense of humour, didn't he?
Funny you should bring that up, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He came over to Andrew's and my wedding, he got me into terrible trouble the night of my wedding, staying up far too late. My mother was parked next door, and she came round and said, "Who's causing all this trouble?" Well, guess who it was? It was Allah. And that was typical Roger. He could work hard and he could play hard. And I don't know, you know, who perhaps might remember some of the early days of Fairhill, which was held every autumn, every fall. And beautiful natural countryside for eventing. But it always fell over Halloween. And Fairhill had, for many years, a very successful Halloween party. And one of his greatest thrills was making sure that he had the right costume for the Halloween party at Fairhill every year. And he came as a fairy, which didn't altogether seem a haller, but it caused huge hilarity. And he had me in a cow's outfit. And we had many happy days like that throughout our long association, actually.
And then, of course, I'm sure you were honoured to be able to induct him into the USEA Hall of Fame in 2012. In preparing for that induction, Mike, I'm curious as to what was going through your mind, how you encapsulate the career of Roger Haller.
Yes, his ability, I think, particularly to work with people, get the best out of them, and to really want whatever he was doing to the very best standard that was possible. And when you travel the world, even in your own country, when it's a, you know, such a huge country as the United States, for instance, you have many different people that are helping you, many different teams. And one of the great important things is that you've got to get on with people to get the best out of them. And that was one of his great strengths. He was very good at working together with a team and getting the best out of them. And he always wanted the best for the sport, but he also wanted the best for the horse, because the welfare of the horse was paramount to his mind. And of course, having been a competitor, he understood all of that. And when he'd been a competitor under the likes of Jack Vigoff in particular, one of the true greats, you know, he had some very, very high standards. And that is what made him such a good person right around the world, because he set goals that... Goals differ around the world. You know, the goals in South America or Central America or even Australia, New Zealand, all of which Roger went to, you know, you have to set the goals that are adequate and right for the place involved. And that means meeting people, knowing them, and then going for the best you can achieve. And that was always what he used to try and do.
And he will be missed globally, as we know. But on a friendship level, Mike, what would be your most fondest memories as mates with Roger over the years?
There are lots. There really are lots. I think actually the fact that you know, he actually came over to our wedding in 1972, it was, and that to me was something very special. He actually rang me up and he said, "Do you mind if I came to your wedding?" We actually hadn't even thought of inviting him, to be perfectly honest. And you know, he basically said, you know, "I'd love to come." And that the fact that he felt he could do that was something that I always cherish. And you know, as a result, it made the special occasion even more unique and special, frankly. And that's something that I will always remember. Again, our fun at Heath, at Fair Hill, together with trying to develop what for me is, again, one of the finest eventing sites there is in the world, because the terrain and everything is absolutely fabulous, was again a very happy time. And I guess the other one too was actually Atlanta. We haven't mentioned about that because, of course, we talked about Lexington and the heat and humidity of 78. That was a bit of a one-off because there haven't been championships in that sort of heat and humidity either before or since, quite to that level, except at Atlanta. And of course, there was huge research, and Hugh and Roger worked the other way around. Hugh was the technical delegate there for Roger as course designer, and the work they put in again too with some of the experts from the Animal Health Trust into heat and humidity, of course, have set the rules for the sport. And okay, sometimes they don't work out as you would like them, but on the other hand, those were the rules and regulations that have really stood the sport in very good stead. And I went out there to work for BBC television, and to see how thrilled that the two of them were, that they achieved the accomplishment they did in very difficult conditions, was again something that gave me a lot of pleasure, because I know how much it meant to Roger. And, you know, it wasn't an easy one, because it was a piece of country together with the weather that could have gone very wrong, but in fact came out very well.
Would it be at all possible to summarise his contribution to the sport of eventing globally, Mike, because he did so many different things?
He did. I mean, there are really very few people. You can name many people who contributed to certain aspects of the sport. Frank Weldon would be one I would suggest. Again, Hugh Thomas is another. Both of them more involved in the organization and the design of courses. But of course, there are many others. And I'm talking of the American support, for instance, Jack Le Goff. I mean, a judge, which is so important because it looks at all aspects of the sport, but also to one of the most outstanding trainers there's been in the sport. And Roger actually encapsulated all of those jobs and more to the very top level. And there are very few people, in fact, I can't think one off the top of my head very quickly now, that would have achieved so much over such a wide aspect of the sport. And he contributed to so much in that way all around the world. I mean, his contribution has been quite outstanding, frankly.
Well, as I said earlier, there will be a celebration of his life today in Oxford, Georgia, as well as a memorial gathering, which is being planned for April the 28th during the Rolex Kentucky three-day event. Mike, your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are that one has lost a really true friend who was always there, pick up the phone or even email or whatever, through thick and thin, and one who has given so much pleasure and excitement to many different generations, actually, of all the exciting aspects that eventing can bring to people, the highs, the lows. He could really contribute to all of those. And that is something that's been very, very special, certainly to me, and I know many others too.